Hello and welcome to Pods Like Us. I'm Martin Quibell, known to my friends as Marv, and this time I'm speaking with the titular Podman from I Am the Podman. Hey, thanks for speaking with me today.
Marv, my pleasure. It's great to be on your fantastic podcast.
Thank you, and thank you for the really good review that you did on my show, about my show. So what about this show? Because I do two other shows. We're on about your show this time, which is interesting because it's a podcast about podcasting or podcasts, but about podcasts that are Beatles podcast, essentially. Well, most of the time.
Most of the time. Sometimes I do stray into related podcasts. But my thinking was I would always have people saying to me, you should do a podcast about the Beatles. And they come to me with all their bizarre questions. Why are there two guitar solos on two different versions of Let It Be? Whatever it happens to be. And I will give them their answer. And people will say, you should do a podcast. You should do a podcast. And I listened to a lot of podcasts. And I said, you don't understand what Beatles scholarship has become. I may know a lot. But if you listen to Richard Buskin, Stephen Cockcroft, Chris Shaw, Robert Rodriguez, those people know more than I will ever forget about the Beatles.
Yeah.
So that doesn't seem to make too much sense to me that I would share my paltry knowledge when you have such giants when it comes to Beatle knowledge talking about the Fabs. So I kind of thought on that a little bit. And I thought doing a podcast might be fun. I've since realized it's not. No, I'm just kidding. But anyway, and I thought, well,
it's hard work.
It is. What can I do? And I said, well, I've heard some dreadful podcasts. I mean, stuff that I can't believe exists. I won't name names, but I remember listening to one where it was about the Beatles and the Beatles' humor. And okay. They would say things like, a lot of people don't know this, but George Harrison was a big fan of comedy. And then they would play 15 seconds of like Muzak, not even Beatle music. It would be like, dun, da da dun, 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 da da dun. And then they'd come back with another one line. John Lennon used to tell the audience to shut up. Dun, da da dun. And I thought, okay, I could do a podcast. What the heck? If this is passing for a podcast, I can do a podcast. And there was a show on American television, I'm sure it's not on anymore, actually on PBS, called Sneak Previews.
Yep.
And it was two film critics, and they would play a film trailer. And they, of course, had seen the film. So they played the trailer, and then they would discuss the movie. And I thought, well, I mean, I can do what people who have absolutely no talent do, and that is I could be a critic. And so that's kind of the direction I took. As a strange aside, I happened to be watching that show. I came back from a jog and was watching that show rather than watching the football game on the evening of December the 8th, 1980.
Wow.
That's the show I was watching. It's all connected. But anyway, so that's why I decided to start I Am the Podman, a Beatles podcast review. Another reason for it was I wanted to talk about some of the amazing podcasts that are out there. There are things that if you're a Beatles fan, you need to listen to these things. They're incredible. Nothing is real. Oh my goodness. I Am the Egg Pod. Incredible. Pods Like Us. Incredible.
Thank you.
But you know, and it opens up the whole story of the Beatles in so many other ways. And that's always quite fascinating. So that was kind of my motivation. And of course, the other motivation is I know I'll eventually make millions from this, right?
Of course.
You can attest to that, right?
I can. None of these guitars behind me were purchased with any money I've got from this. They're years old from back in the day.
Yes, and when I bought this painting that's behind me, I didn't use podcast money for that either. Okay, no, it's not a painting. But if the owner of it would like to give it to me, I would graciously accept it.
See if I can get Paul to give you one of his paintings for free.
Yeah, that'd be nice too. I'd take one of Ringo's, even his kind of stick figures with the heads. Those are kind of cool. Yes. Although my top choice, I would probably choose a Stu Sutcliffe. Other than this one, I think I would choose a Stu Sutcliffe. I like quite a bit of his work.
Yeah, either Stu or Klaus's work. I love Klaus's work as well.
Yeah. Yeah, fantastic stuff.
Amazing. So we're already going out of this, because the secret to this show is that I have a list of bullet points that I follow, so that if we ever stray, I allow the show to stray, but always make sure that these points are hit. So what is your actual earliest Beatles memory?
Well, I've got visual aids. This is actually one of my earliest Beatle memories. I had one of these guitars when I was a little pod man, a pod boy.
Okay.
And I remember absolutely loving She Loves You. That's the first thing that I remember. And I lived in New York. Sunday dinners, from an ethnic background, Sunday dinners were a huge thing. So we would go to those Sunday dinners and I'd be surrounded by people who didn't speak English. No, that's unfair. But, well, let's say, you know, first generation immigrants, and I was 3 and I'd be strumming my guitar, singing, yeah, yeah, yeah. And they loved it. I got to watch the Ed Sullivan Show. I only got to watch the Beatles' first set. After that, it was like, no, it's time for bed. You can't watch anymore. So, and I don't remember watching anything else, any of the subsequent Ed Sullivan shows.
Okay.
It's interesting because New York was, I just feel that New York was very Beatles oriented, especially in 1964.
Yeah.
And it was Beatles everywhere. And then once I moved to the West Coast, I lost track until 1973. My father and I were in, I think it was a store called Grant's. It's long gone. And my dad picked up the Blue and the Red album and he was just amazed. He said, this has all the hits on it. We have to get these, but we didn't own a stereo.
Okay.
So he said, the only way I can sell this to your mother is if we sell the basically Victrola. It was a big RCA, beautiful piece of furniture, but it weighed about 1 million pounds. So we had a garage sale, sold that. Bought ourselves a crappy little stereo and the Beatles, the Red and the Blue album. And I was just, it's probably 1973. It's probably the first time I ever heard stereo.
Yep.
And I was just astounded. So it kind of shot me right back to She Loves You. And I was obsessed, immediately obsessed with the Beatles. I mean, I remember hearing the sound effects on Yellow Submarine. And I mean, it was just like, oh my goodness, I've never heard anything like this before. Or how intensely frightening I Am the Walrus was. I remember when that goes into mono, the stereo system we had a little cabinet and my mom and dad's records. My mom's Doris Day records, my dad's Tchaikovsky and Joni James and Johnny Ray were all in there. And I remember sitting there listening to I Am the Walrus and thinking, there has to be a speaker in the middle, and taking all their records out, looking for that middle speaker, because that's where the sound was coming from. It's hard to imagine now, but in 1973, hearing stereo for the first time was an incredible experience. And to get to hear it on the Beatles just made it even more incredible.
Yeah.
So that's my first memory of the Beatles. And And so you could say I basically took 1965 to 1973 off. And then my fandom really got shoved into overdrive in 1973 with those albums. So I guess I'm a first generation and a second generation Beatle fan.
That's true. You just didn't have the in-between years. But I mean, the Red and the Blue, they're my first experiences as well. Because I was born in 1970 and my parents bought the Red and the Blue and they bought Red Rose Speedway and Band on the Run all at the same time. So all those four were bought then. So I was brought up on that, and then that taught me then every time we visited, even as a child, family or anybody or any friends of family, I'd sort of like see them go out to go and make a drink. And then make a shot straight to the record collection. And it became a thing then that I'd always base what I think of people based upon what was in their record collection. You'd go there and you'd flick through the records and go, oh, that's good. He's got that one. And those people that were really, really into it, you'd know they were really into it because they've got a copy of the Ringo album.
Yeah.
Or they've got one of George's albums back then. If you've got something like 33 and a third, you'll think, oh, that's somebody who really loves the Beatles.
Absolutely. So, and it's funny because once you've gotten the Red and the Blue album, you get that little insert, which I don't think you had in England, did you? Which listed all the, it was so inaccurate. So, okay. I mean, for years, you're looking for the Beatles single Thingamabob because it says it's a Beatles single on that. But I would have friends who would say, oh, you like the Beatles? Have you heard Purple Hand? Like, what's that? And eventually, of course, I realized that Purple Hand is Living in the Material World. But at that time, who knew? Man. So I thought, well, George has an album, Living in the Material World, and apparently an album called Purple Hand that I've never heard. So it's so different nowadays. I was thinking about this. In 1980, my best friend and I went to England.
Yep.
And I remember we shot probably three rolls of film each, 36 exposure, so about 100 shots each on the train from Gatwick to London, because everything was so different and amazing to us. And of course, the biggest target, Battersea Power Station. We had no idea what it was called. There was no internet. We couldn't look that up.
No.
But it's like, Dana, that's the building from Help and Animals. Oh my gosh. Click, click, click. It was such an incredible experience. And I mean, one that can't be relived. And I guess knowing is better than learning in some instances. Yeah, maybe not. I take that back. I'm going to absolve myself of that statement. I think learning is maybe better than knowing. More fun.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I always used to have fun learning about new music from people, and that's definitely something that I used to love, when somebody would introduce you to something, or even if you just found it off your own bat and you hear something for the first time and it just grabs you like that. But yeah, so that's your earliest memory of the Beatles, and that's sort of gone up. You've explained basically the history of why your show started and your podcast listening history as well. You've gone into that. So how did you then decide on the structure and how the episodes would go about? Because for people who haven't listened to the show, it's incredibly produced. You've got a lot going on there with, you've got little like sections and different intervals, and there's all sorts of things going on in the background.
So I made the decision to do the podcast.
Yep.
But I knew absolutely nothing about audio production.
Yep.
So I took some classes at a local college. I had some fantastic teachers. And this is all within the past year.
Okay.
And I learned how to use Audacity. Not that I use that. I use Audition to do my shows.
Yep.
But all of that was fascinating and so much fun. I remember making mixtapes of the Beatles when I was a young teenager. And how cool that was. One of the ones I love talking about is I at one time made a, I think it was probably a 60-minute tape, a C60, and it was the songs I considered to be the worst Beatles songs. And I made it, I sat down, I listened to it, and I thought to myself, this is fantastic stuff. And these are the worst Beatles songs. Now I take the opinion there are no bad Beatles songs. I mean, even give me the first 10 seconds of Mr. Moonlight, and that's all I need. That's the one people always yell about. But anyway, so where was I before I went down the rabbit hole?
Yeah, we'll quickly say that that vocal at the beginning of Mr. Moonlight by John is amazing.
It is. It really is. Yeah, the organ and... You know what? Bad Beatles are pretty much better than anything else you can ever get.
Yep. So nailing the structure and the production.
Ah, okay. So I sat down to write a script and really didn't like what I was doing. And I thought, well, I do have the whole concept of doing reviews of other podcasts.
Yep.
And so when I sat down to do the first episode, it was shortly after Now and Then had come out. And I thought to myself, I cannot not do a Beatles podcast.
Yeah.
And not talk about Now and Then. It's amazing. Yeah. For so many reasons. The music in and of itself is one thing. But as I talk about, I think it represents so much more. And so I said, well, I'm going to do a little commentary segment. Then I did a review. I can't remember whose podcast I did. Oh, it was Chris Shaw's I Am the Egg Pod.
Yep.
Because I felt terrible about, I am the Pod Man. That's going to be the name of my show. I can't believe no one's used that. That it's such a great title, blah, 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 blah. And I thought, this is weird. And then I realized, wait, I love Chris Shaw's show. It's one of my all-time favorites.
Yeah.
And it's called I Am the Podbean. Podbean, that's our, I Am the Egg. What is it? I Am the Egg Pod.
Yep.
And I thought, well, as a way of honoring him and his fantastic show, I have to review his show first. Yep. And I made a commitment to myself because I kind of impinged upon his name to a certain extent. I'll mention his show every show. So I did that review. And then there's Parlagram Auctions. And that's fantastic as well. And I thought, I've got to mention that. But it doesn't really fit in. It's not a podcast. It's a video and he does a weekly episode. And I thought, I've got to mention that. So that's where I came up with the center section called Media City, which then opens everything up. I can talk about basically anything. I talk about live events. I'll be doing books. I can talk. It's a free-for-all on that one.
Yeah.
So, and unfortunately, as it was the first episode, I gave Parlagram Auctions a very short shrift on that. And I will go back to it because it's so extraordinary. He does such a beautiful job. And then I did another podcast that I wasn't terribly fond of. I don't want to slam anybody, for crying out loud. We're all Beatle fans.
Yep.
But I think it was a podcast that revolved around listening to the Beatles and drinking. And I think my final review was, get a couple of your Beatle buddies, hit the pub, have some drinks and talk about the Beatles. It'll probably be a much better time. So I will probably go back to that podcast just because maybe I caught an off podcast. So I'll go back and listen to it again. But it seems like pretty much I've done one that I like a great deal and one that I don't like quite so much. The reality is what I'm doing is I'm choosing one that I know and that I know I'm going to love because they're fantastic. And choosing one that I probably not ever heard. I did Fans on the Run, Ethan Alexanian's.
Yep.
And that was wonderful. But I had never heard that before. And Ethan is a terrific guy. So that was a fun one to do. So I actually had on my last episode two podcasts that I liked a great deal. And then I also talked about the NAMM convention, which was an extraordinary experience. So that's why it wound up being almost 2 hours.
Hey, this is Jeff Cummings from the Best Song Podcast, the show that is telling the stories of every song nominated for the Academy Award. You're listening to Pods Like Us.
Hey, this is Brian with Concerts That Made Us Podcast, and you're listening to Pods Like Us, a great show about other great shows.
But it's more interesting in a way because what you're doing is, well, it's not, it's different in a way to other Beatles podcasts in a sense that you're doing that and then it's multi-layered essentially, whereas a podcast like I do outside of this one of those two that I do, is right. About a specific subject. We might hit the news at the beginning, this is going on in the Beatles world, blah, blah, blah. And then we basically do similar thing to a lot of the other podcasts do. But yours, it does a section on the review in this show, then you'll do what's going on in the Beatles world that's hit you and other things that are going on in your life around the Beatles world. And then you might do another review. And like you said, you do this Media City where you'll look at video shows or something else that's to do with it. So it's not staying on the same subject in a way. It's going from one subject to another, and it makes it more, in some ways, it fits more for people that are more interested in, it's a show that I think if you wanted to, you could listen to one section of the show. If you've not got much time in your life to be able to do podcast and listen to an entire hour, 2 hours, it works for you being able to sit down and listen to 15 to 20 minutes on one subject, and then you can take a break if you want to, and come back to it, and then you're on talking about something else that is still Beatles related and fits with the general everything, but you can take it in bits or you can take it as a whole, which you can't really do with most of the other Beatles related shows.
And the way I think about podcasts is it's an audio experience. So you can be doing other things. Now on YouTube, our dear friends at YouTube who apparently will, the whole copyright situation on YouTube is insane. But what I've been doing with YouTube is taking a segment, exactly what you say. I've taken a segment because if you're watching YouTube, you are watching it. So I'll take a segment, a 15-minute segment, for example, and make that a YouTube short. Not that it's a short in terms of YouTube. But anyway, but I use that thinking that maybe people are not going to want to stick around for an hour and a half. Most of my episodes are about 45 minutes, but so that's kind of a novel way of doing that. The other thing is it's great for content because I can take one show and put up three shorts from one show. So that kind of works nicely as well. The other thing I love is finding things that I want Beatle fans to listen to the podcast and go, I see what you did there. I mean, if there's such a thing as audio Easter eggs, that is one of the things I'm really concentrating on. I love doing that. I just quite serendipitously, the last episode, which I nickname, it's called Podman the Force. Yeah. And I subtitle it A Walrus Runs Through It. And just complete coincidence, I realized that every segment of the show has a lot to do with I Am the Walrus. And so I made my commentary about I Am the Walrus. And I said, I've got to find some weird things. And finding, tangentially, I refer to It's All Too Much. And I find a version of It's All Too Much in Dutch. I mean, to me, that is something that's incredibly cool. Some people might think, please, you've got the Beatles. What do you need that for? A bluegrass version of It's All Too Much. I mean, stuff like that is just very cool to me and a lot of fun. And if the Beatles were about anything, it was fun. I mean, their second single is fun defined. You can't listen to Please Please Me without getting up and moving your ass. It's an incredible song, and it is so much fun. And they maintain that all the way through.
We were giving something away here. We were talking about Love Me Do. You've just reminded me saying that about Please Please Me. Me and Ed were talking about Love Me Do last night. Uh-huh. And the fact that in the McCartney Life in Lyrics podcast, Paul almost puts the song down in a sense as being, oh, it's just a simple little song and it's nothing to it. And then John used to put it down as well. And I was saying with Ed, I was saying that the thing is, I said, it might be a simple song, but it's effective. It works. And also I said, I don't think they realize the power of that song as much as the listeners, but it's the same for all creatives, really. You create a song that makes you big. Love Me Do, it, no matter what people say about Please Please Me, Love Me Do hit the charts in the UK, and that was the start of it. And then Please Please Me just took them to a whole nother level. And now I don't know where I was going to go with that one, except just to say that a song can be simple, but it can be an incredible song at the same time.
Absolutely. And I think one of the things that, you know, when you are basically one of the greatest composers of all time, and certainly Mr. McCartney fills those shoes quite aptly, it's easy to put down things and to not overplay. So let's face it, the level of your own greatness, if he walked around saying, they're comparing me to Mozart, it would turn people off. So he has to be a little bit coy on that. And while the lyrics of Love Me Do don't hit the level of thoughts meander like a restless wind inside a letterbox.
Yeah.
For 1962, those lyrics are not bad.
No.
I mean, if you take them out of context, you might think, well, they're kind of simplistic and the playing is simplistic. And why is Ringo pounding on that tambourine when he should be on the drums? But if from 1962, that's a great song. I mean, it certainly doesn't portend what's to come in a few short months with Please Please Me. I mean, which is just off the charts. Please Please Me, you could listen to anything on the radio today, and it doesn't have the power of that song. However, I think Paul was just being coy anyway, because let's face it, he has creative decisions. And he's the one, I'm sure, who said, yes, B-side of Now and Then, Please Love Me Do.
Yeah.
So I take that, actually, I take everything Paul says with a grain of salt.
Yes.
And I'll take that from your podcast with Alan Kozin. Alan said Paul has a public persona and a private persona. Yeah. And when he tells these stories, he's being Paul McCartney, the famous Paul McCartney, the act you've known for all these years.
Yep.
And so it doesn't matter if they're letter of the law true. It's something that people have come to expect. It's kind of like going to a McCartney concert and he's going to sing Beatles songs. That's what everyone expects and that's what everybody wants. And we want to hear those funny stories about Live and Let Die. Oh, who are you going to get to sing it? Or whatever, Sergeant Pepper, Salt and Pepper. We want to hear those stories. And to steal his phrase, it's bloody Paul McCartney. Shut up.
Well, I mean, you hit something there. And on the show that I do with Ed and with Kit O'Toole, Toppermost of the Poppermost, we're saying on that with each record from Love Me Do, As you carry on, especially in that first year, each release is that much of a step up from the previous release that the way that they grew in that first year alone is astounding.
I mean, they took a career and jammed it into, well, let's call it 8 years, and the progress is amazing. I often think about that. If I haven't listened to something in a while and I throw on whatever it happens to be, and I'll be listening and I'll think, it's unfathomable that these guys did not have an advanced musical knowledge and music theory education, because the things they do are incredible. And I know that Paul has said, well, we kind of like that because we're not stuck in a series of rules. And I understand that, but it's just amazing stuff. There are times when it's like, these four scruffs from Liverpool could not have written this song. It is so amazing. And you could basically pick 50 songs and say that about it. So it's quite astounding. I remember the first time I went to Liverpool, it was 1980, and I had an epiphany.
Okay.
And that was, back then Liverpool was not Beatles-centric. Now it's like Beatles Disneyland, which is so cool. But back then, really nothing. And I thought to myself, these guys knew what they had to do to get out of here.
Yeah.
They knew what their lives would be like if they stayed here. They'd be working on the dock. Paul would be a 9-to-5 school teacher. George would probably be an electrician or something. Ringo would be working in a hair salon. Who knows?
Yeah.
And they made a decision, whether they made it consciously or not, that we're going to work our butts off and we're going to get out of here and we're going to go to the toppermost of the poppermost.
Absolutely.
And they did. And it's amazing. It's a story you wouldn't believe if it was a book. It's been said a million times, but it's too incredible to be true. And the fact that we lived through it is also, I mean, it's an incredible thing. It's kind of like saying, oh, I was able to watch Michelangelo paint the Sistine Chapel. Well, we got to watch the Beatles record the Let It Be album. Thank you, Peter Jackson.
Thank you, Peter Jackson.
That's incredible. But it's people have said this, and I agree. It's a great time to have been alive. Or as John Lennon said, you should have been there.
And shame on you, Disney, for not giving us the 6 hours or whatever that Pete Jackson wanted us to have.
I can't fathom that. It doesn't really cost them anything. That's the other thing. To put something together, we know what the production cost of a DVD is. It's a pittance. And you've got one of the premier Oscar-winning directors who wants to do this. I mean, to me, it's incredible their short-sightedness. I still can't fathom. And after he came out, I firmly believed, oh yeah, give us maybe till next Christmas, and then we'll get the 27-hour version. I mean, there are those of us who listen to podcasts about the Beatles, who rebuy Revolver for the 30th time. We would watch that it'd be so wonderful. It was such an incredible experience. Now, you can say, well, he kind of soft-soaked this or that. I don't care. Just seeing the quality, the footage in that quality was just mind-blowing to me.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, I'd watch 27 hours.
So would I.
Or whatever amount of time they were willing to give us. It's amazing that you watch an 8-hour show, and when it's done, you think, I wish there would have been more.
Sure, Richard Buskin could probably do 27 episodes all about those 27 hours as well.
Absolutely. Yeah, Richard is incredibly knowledgeable. And then for anything he doesn't know about, he can just call his buddy Mark Lewison in to come and provide some extra information. But yeah. Love Richard. He wore, I met him at the Monmouth convention in 2018 about the White Album.
Yeah.
And he wore a crushed red velvet sport coat. I was like, Richard, that's an interesting choice.
You need to check out Joe Wisby's interview or chat with Mark Lewison that came out this past week on Beatles Books. That is a great episode.
And does Mark drop any hints?
He does mention what he's working on at the moment.
Yeah. I feel a bit at a disadvantage because I would have loved to have gone to his Abbey Road seminars And as far as I know, it wasn't even recorded. I've not seen video of it. So being way over here in the colonies, we didn't get to see that, but I'm sure it was extraordinary.
He also includes in that discussion that he still is talking with Paul now and then as well.
That's good.
Yeah.
That's good. I know there was a little bit of friction here and there, but I have to think that Paul, who's chosen not to write an autobiography per se, he said he'll let the songs speak for themselves, has to appreciate that someone is putting everything to paper and telling the story as it should be told. And I know some people have a few little problems with Mark. I don't. I think the book is, now I haven't read, I have to be honest, I haven't read the book. I only read the giant book, the unexpurged version. And it's incredible. And the thing I love about it is it's incredibly funny.
Yeah.
He has a great sense of humor. I have to say, I probably laughed out loud on virtually every page. And when you've got an almost 2,000 page book, that was a lot of laughing.
Yeah.
So.
But there's also the fact that Mark writes from the point of view of just talking the facts. He doesn't put any opinion in there whatsoever. He just puts facts in there. His own opinion, he says, is nothing at all to do with what goes on the page. He doesn't want to make people think something based upon what he thinks about something. He just wants to put the facts out there for people to make their own minds up about it.
Right, because so many authors have put their own two cents in. Yeah. And very often, not only is it not welcome, but it doesn't age well. You read a book on the Beatles from, say, well, let's say early 80s, and there's going to be things in there that probably the authors would want to recant. Philip Norman is an excellent example of that. He's tried making amends for Shout for the past 40 years. But the thing about Mark that I really, other than just the scholarship, is incredible. Having had the opportunity to meet with him and chat with him a bit, he loves the Beatles. He's not one of these people who have a cynical bone to pick with anything. He loves them as much as we do.
Yeah.
And I appreciate that. And he'll say it. It's not like he's playing it close to the vest. He loves these guys. And I think that's a wonderful thing. I think it makes him stand out from a lot of the authors who have more of a hoity-toity view of things. And it gives him a great perspective.
And us talking like this proves to people how you can really go down a rabbit hole with the Beatles, or so many of them, like all these podcasts do that you speak about in your show.
Right. And that is, that can be very, very interesting and very fun. I remember an episode of Nothing Is Real where Stephen Cockcroft and I'm not able to pull the name of his partner up there from memory. Anyway, they do an episode on the whole legal situation with Apple that was fascinating. And it's like, this should be a book. It's incredible.
Hello, Scuba Leavers. This is DJ Scoob from The Undiscovered Entrepreneur, a show that highlights brand new entrepreneurs that are just getting started in their entrepreneur adventure. And you're listening to Pods Like Us with my good friend Marv. Thank you.
Hey, this is Danny from 1 Minute Podcast Tips, the show that helps you be a better podcaster in just a minute a week. And you're listening to Pods Like Us.
Going back to your show then, where do you get your clips from? Because when you were mentioning earlier about the Easter eggs that you put into shows, for instance, I caught the Spies Like Us, which is, to many Beatles fans, I always thought that my show's title would be obvious, really, of to where it came from, in a sense. But it really isn't. When I say to people that are Beatles fans, and I'll say, well, Pods Like Us is basically a take on Spies Like Us.
Right.
They don't notice, but you got that there straight away.
Not only that, but did you notice I played a alternate version of it? I mean, we've all heard Spies Like Us, but it's like, okay, I have to find something a little bit different here.
Is it the one alternative mix known to his friends as, oh, I can't remember the name of that one now, that mix. Is it that one or is it another?
It may be that one. It's not the single mix because the single mix mixes in so much dialogue from the movie that I didn't care for that.
Yep.
But it is an alternate from, I'm sorry, not the maxi single mix. So it's an alternate from the single mix. But yeah. And then on the last episode, I was reading on a site and they were saying that the single mix of Mind Games has never been released in digital format.
Right.
So, I mean, to me, that's a challenge. So I had to find it and eventually did. And I after my Media City, which I joked that John thinks it's Meat City, so I said, I'm going to play this and you won't hear it on YouTube because they'll smash it immediately. And I play the single mix, which has the backward vocal that says, check the album. The album version is a little less savory. But anyway, but yeah, it's like I and I'm not going to talk over it. So if somebody wants to listen to it in a pristine form, there it is. So, and that to me is fun.
So you got the music of the show and the logo. Yes, when my episodes, actually, you mentioned that about the music, when my own episodes recently were uploaded from Podbean to YouTube, I got hit with so many tellings or by YouTube because one of the trailers of episodes that I've used in mine, I sometimes put trailers for other shows in mine. And one of those trailers, actually the Electric Light Orchestra podcast, Face the Music, they use Mr. Blue Sky in the background of their trailer. So every episode that's got their trailer in, I've been hit with this message from YouTube about.
Yeah. So on the last episode, episode 4, it was blocked from YouTube for 24 copyright violations.
Okay.
And so when I went to college to learn about audio production, I also took a course in music law.
Okay.
And so I'm able to write to them and explain to them why what I'm doing is fair use. It does not fall under the ability to block it due to copyright. Well, now it's tedious to do that 24 times, but that's what you have to do. And I'm willing to do that because I know that YouTube is a very valuable resource for people listening to podcasts and music. Apparently it's the most listened to form of music or music platform, which to me is amazing. But so it's like, well, what the heck? I'll do it. Now, eventually I may just walk away and say, sorry, everybody else understands this and everybody else deals with the law logically and deals with the letter of the law. YouTube, I would say, skews themselves to the copyright holders, but I'm going to assume that that's going to change. I think somebody a little bit more litigious than I am, and or maybe someone who has money, unlike I do, will say, I'm going to hire an attorney and we're going to go ahead and we're going to address this issue. And it's in YouTube's best interest. I mean, these are all listeners. Why would they turn them away? It doesn't make much sense to me. But then again, this is my first Zoom, so I'm not more of a Luddite than I would care to admit.
I mean, I've been hit by that before years ago. For instance, Ray Davies of the Kinks, he put a video up, and it was a Kinks song or something. They were advertising, promoting basically that a Kinks reissue was coming, and because I'm a huge Kinks fan as well, love the Kinks. And so I thought, oh, well, what I'll do is I'll repost it on my own Instagram account. So it's only a repost of what they put. And then a few months down the line, I got a message from Instagram, who were owned by Facebook anyway, and it was saying, "Oh, we've removed this from your account or your Facebook, your page on Instagram because it violates this, that, and the other." And I sort of sent them a message back saying, "Does it violate? Because all I'm doing is reposting something by the people who owned it in the first place." And
exactly,
I have a problem with it because I see it all as a way of promoting these artists. Essentially, it's like the radio. If you play these people's music on the radio, it gets people interested in their music. I just see it as another form of that for them, for promoting. And I don't know why they just can't ignore it.
Yeah, it's very strange. And I mean, it does actually go back to English common law. And if you're a copyright holder and you object to something on your podcast, something on my podcast, there are things that you need to do. And it doesn't seem like that's being required. The burden of proof doesn't seem to be on the person who's requesting the action. And that is not how it should be. I'm sure it will change eventually. But for right now, it can be very frustrating and time consuming. So, but yeah, 24 on the last podcast. And many of the things that they cited were incorrect. It's like, oh, you can't play this. You can't play whatever, Double Back Alley by the Ruddles. Well, I'm not playing Double Back Alley by the Ruddles. I'm playing an AI-generated version of the song. Nothing in the original recording is on this.
Yep.
AI cannot be copyrighted. So, therefore, you shouldn't be blocking this or whatever it happens to be.
Yep.
So, it's interesting. It's moderately frustrating, but, you know, it would never make me say, okay, I'm stopping doing the podcast. It's too much. But there's a lot of fun and being able to kind of address the issue and get the copyright restriction removed it's part of the process. And what the heck?
I mean, we do the same with Toppermost in a way, because all of the stings in there, all the little musical clips that are in there, at the beginning and at the end, definitely. I mean, we do play the little clips of the songs that we're talking about, but the opening and the end bits, they're actually me performing the music to the Beatles myself. It's not the Beatles. So I'm doing the bass line to Come Together, and I'm doing the guitar part from Ticket to Ride, or I do And I Love Her. I've got that on there as well. And I think I've done another one. Was it I Want to Hold Your Hand? I think I've got as well. So that's another way around it, because you can't really get in trouble for doing somebody else's, I don't think, for putting your own interpretation of it or a little clip of that on there. I don't think you can.
You can.
Hmm.
You can. I mean, in terms of copyright law, you're performing a song that is under copyright.
Yeah.
But the thing is, you're performing it. Typically, it's not going to be longer than 30 seconds. And
it's about five or six seconds. Yeah,
exactly. I got dinged for a 9-second version of I Am the Walks. It's like, you've got to be kidding. Are you really concerned that someone is going to take that 9 seconds of I Am the Walrus and say, oh, now I don't have to buy the Beatles song. I own it already. That's just silly. It's gotten to the point of being a little bit silly, but this too shall pass.
It will. So recording and editing, then, you've already said that you use Audition, and we've come straight past the logo that was also in there with the music. That logo is so cool.
Thank you. I love those Richard Avedon pictures from 67. Another visual. I love that they finally used them for something.
We can't see that.
I know. I disappeared. Let's see. There we go. I disappeared again. Invisible Man strikes again. And so I thought, well, my initial thought was to do 4 seasons, each episode or each season of 6 episodes. The logo would be the John picture, but it's me, the Paul picture, but it's me. Although I'm apt not to want to take my shirt off, but in any case, or the George one. And I do have all those exact same tattoos. So that's, but now I don't know that. And then the fifth season would be all four of them. But now I'm having fun kind of coming up with the parodies of the sleeves as they apply to the number of the episode. Podman the Force, the Podman's second podcast, those sorts of things. And that's a lot of fun too. And there's a certain motivation. Once the cover is done, it's like, okay, the cover's done. I got to get this podcast out by this Saturday or whatever it is. So that's part of the fun. And I've always enjoyed those. I have a wonderful Japanese book. I don't even know what it's called. And I don't even remember where I got it, but it's a paperback. And that's all it is parodies of Beatles albums. And it's so cool. Someday I'll get somebody to translate it for me, but it's just one of those things that I enjoy looking at. And so I thought, well, let me do a few of these. So it's a bit of fun.
So we'll go on to that then. So the recording and editing, so you use Audition, did you say?
I do. I have a blue, what's it called? A blue snowball. So I use that. Yep. I've seen yours. Yeah. There was a gift from the
Ed and Kate bought it me. Yes.
Yeah. That's very nice of them. So I could use another one. No. But yeah, so I'm pretty happy with the way it sounds. I don't do a lot of compression. In fact, I don't do any. My thinking is I could probably make it sound better, but I mean, it's this voice. How good can it sound? It's all I got. So I don't mess with it too much. And I kind of, in the back of my mind, I know if I tried to do something, it'd be like, okay, I just lost the entire episode. That's sort of, wait a minute, I added compression and now it just sounds like static or whatever.
Yeah.
So I don't do much with that. And I know I should, but I don't have any illusions as to what I'm doing being important or historical in any way, shape, or form. So I'm the Zapple of podcasts. Listen to it, dispose of it.
That's interesting because you're leading now into something that I've got later on, which I had in mind for later, which is what are you actually listening for then when you listen to shows? What do you listen to? If you're not listening to that sort of quality of voice all the way through with the compressed and the perfection, is it all about the subject and what the top topic is and what they're talking about?
Well, when I'm listening for my pleasure, it is all about the subject and what they're talking about.
Yep.
When I'm listening to do a review, I will mention, I'll mention the quality of the recording itself. I just, one of the segments on my last show, I'm at NAMM, and it's Mr. Banzai, who was there at the recording of I Am the Walrus.
Okay.
Knocked on John's door and they chit-chatted a while and John took him to Abbey Road. But where do these people get a life like that? Anyway, so it's him and Jim Keltner and Danny Kutchmer. And the problem is these recording geniuses, right, are constantly talking off mic. They'll be saying something and it's like, you're holding the mic. You have to put it to your mouth in order for us to hear you.
Yep.
So it's like, well, you got to do what you got to do. It's such amazing material that the fact that it'd be maybe turning the volume up here and there, it's worth it. It's great stuff. When I listen to a podcast for my own entertainment, I'm listening for the knowledge of the hosts, the topic. I am hoping to learn something and I'm hoping to enjoy it. I mean, that's really what it comes down to. So there are podcasts where the hosts are, let's say, B-level Beatle knowledge, but they're funny guys.
Yep.
I enjoy that podcast. On the other hand, someone who's, I don't find entertaining or humorous at all, they could be very knowledgeable and it's like, I don't know if I might listen to specific episodes, but I do need to address the technical issue when I'm reviewing a podcast. And as I said on my teaser episode, that is the pot calling the kettle black because I know I don't spend a lot of time on it, but nevertheless, it's something I do address.
with your show, it's out of word. This with your show, it's almost like waved away from my point of view, and I'm guessing from other people's points of view as well when they listen to it, because you've got all these little Easter eggs and things going on around it as well. That it's almost like, not quite, but it's almost like got a sketch show feel to it, in a sense, where you've got like this section there, then you've got this little bit there, and it's almost like these little musical interlude bits of yours are almost like the Terry Gilliam animated 5-minute short in between the different Monty Python sketches, in essence. So it's almost like waved away, because it's all part of the of that aesthetic that's going on there anyway.
That's very, very generous of you to compare it to Terry Gilliam's Monty Python segments. I appreciate that very much. I'll take the compliment, even though I don't know that it's warranted. But I think it does move the show along a little bit.
Yep.
And even if someone were just listening, it's like the Podman's babbling about this and I'm tired of it, but I know it's not going to go too long until he's going to play Harry Nilsson demoing 1941 on acoustic guitar. Oh my gosh. Something like that. Oh my God.
He's playing George Harrison singing the Ringo Starr song.
Or John singing The Inner Light. I mean, that was an amazing thing to find. And it's like, wow, this is incredible. I don't think I had ever heard that. You get to the point where you've heard so much that it's like, I may have heard it a million times, but I just hearing it was like, wow, I've got to include this. And so I've got to kind of go off on a little Inner Light tangent to rope that in, because it's such an incredible piece of incredible recording. Yeah. So that made it a lot of fun. And that makes it fun for me doing it. And my imagination is, if I, as a lifelong Beatle fan, enjoy doing it, then probably one or two, and my numbers would seem to indicate it is only one or two people, would enjoy listening to it.
Well, hoping that more people will. What was it? We're going to use a different analogy from somewhere else now. If you build it, they will come.
There you go. Yeah. So hopefully, I'm hoping that Beatle fans will find it entertaining. I always have a large number of friends who, when I was just running up to getting this started, they were like, I can't wait to listen to your podcast. I can't wait to listen to your podcast. And it was so difficult for me, because it's like, I appreciate that. It's so wonderful of you to say that. But if you're not a very big Beatle fan, I just think it would be incredibly boring. Who wants to listen to somebody talking about worldwide versions of It's All Too Much? No one wants to hear that, except those of us who are crazy Beatle fans. And for us, it's like icing on the cake. So, but yes, it's fun to do. And it's the research is also fun to do. I mean, I did a segment about John Lennon's piano that was at a concert that I went to recently. It was on display, and it was his piano at Weybridge. And then, and it's a beautiful, beautiful piano, 1897. I can't remember the manufacturer.
Is it a Bossendorf?
No, it's a British manufacturer, something and Son, but I can't remember.
Yeah.
Anyway, so he brought this piano with him to Tittenhurst, but Ringo never owned it. John gave it to someone, and he had it inscribed with a plaque. On this piano was written in benefit of Mr. Kite, Lucy in the Sky with Diamonds, blah, 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 blah.
Yep.
I could not find who he gave it to, which is amazing, you would think. And I spent days looking for that information. It's like, John gave the piano that he used to write most of the songs on Sgt. Pepper and Magical Mystery Tour to someone. Who was it?
Hmm.
So it's one of those things that it's And was it frustrating? Yes. But was it cool? Yes, it was cool. It was fun looking up all that information.
So it's not the same piano that George Michael ended up buying, is it? It's not that one.
No, George Michael bought the Imagine piano, the white one from the Imagine video.
Yeah.
And I can't remember who bought it. Maybe Elton John bought that one. I'm not sure. But
maybe.
This one is now owned by Jim Irsay, the owner of the football team, the Indianapolis Colts.
Yeah.
And who also owns the drum head from the Ed Sullivan Show and a lot of guitars. Some really fascinating stuff. Mm. Oh, to be rich.
Oh, to be rich. Yes.
This is Dave of Live Life Loud, the Decibolic Podcast, and you're listening to
Pods Like Us with Marv.
Hello, everybody. This is Ryan.
This is Avery.
And we are from the Frame by Frame King Crimson Podcast, and you are listening to Pods Like Us.
So, what... I mean, it's almost stupid because this next one, I'm not sure whether we should just go past this because you've put up four episodes so far.
Right.
Yep. So how on earth could you highlight a single episode out of four episodes?
It's funny because when I listen to, so for example, this past weekend, I listened to the first episode and I just cringe, even though it's only, 6 weeks ago that I did that. But still, I listen and it's like, oh my goodness. And even in the last episode, there's one segment where I start and during the episode, I can sense how much better it gets than it was at the beginning. And so that's interesting. I think I always like, I think it was John who said, I always like the latest one the most. Well, I feel the same way. I always like the latest one the most because I think every episode is a learning experience. Now, I love the episode on AI. That was the third one, what the heck did I call that one? Oh, what the heck is that? Oh, that's Meet the Pod Man. That's not my hair, obviously, on the cover, but they are all my faces. But yeah, I love the AI episode because I find that fascinating. I don't have any great hatred for it. I know a lot of people really do, nor do I have any great love for it, but it is interesting. Mm-hmm. And I've got to tell you, when I heard the younger version of McCartney singing New with Lennon doing the chorus, that's not a song I gave a lot of credence to until I heard that. And it's like, that's an amazing song. Or the young version of Calico Skies. That's a beautiful song. It's an incredible song, but when they de-age his voice, it's astounding. But anyway, so I enjoyed that episode and I enjoyed finding all those little bits. And then of course, deciding, I can't quite use that. Paul singing Mr. Blue Sky, that's really cool, but it doesn't really fit. I can't use that. But John singing Smashing Pumpkins 1979, how cool is that? Come on, it's a great song to begin with. But anyway, so that was fun. But I think the latest episode is the one I always like the most. And I was getting a lot of feedback, cut this episode. It's too long. It's almost 2 hours. It's like, and I won't do another one that's long. That's as long as that probably. But it's a fun one. And it's so positive. Everything on it is a lot of fun. So it's a good one. I enjoy it.
Yeah. So, take that with a pinch of salt.
Always.
It's like that episode you're on about with the AI where it starts. That's the one where you reviewed Pods Like Us, the episode with Alan Cozen.
Yes.
And then you said, oh, that's the last time that you'll do a show that's not Beatles related ever again. And then you did it again later in the same episode.
Exactly.
Yep.
I think I said, like, I won't ever do this again unless it's in about 30 minutes from now. But I mean, this last episode, I reviewed what I consider to be just one of the most amazing podcasts, and it's A History of Rock in 500 Songs by Andrew Hickey,
yeah, a
gentleman from Manchester. It is astounding. I mean, it really is an incredible podcast. And he does a lot of episodes about the Beatles. The Beatles get mentioned in virtually every episode. Even back in when he starts in the 20s, there's mentions of the Beatles in some of those episodes. So it's very Beatles-centric because it's talking about the history of rock. And if you're talking about the history of rock, well, you should get to talk about the Beatles. But it's an astounding podcast. And a podcast that has led me to discover, well, not to discover, but you were talking about hearing about new music. And there are things that it's like, wow, I need to typically re-listen to that. And I just found things that, oh, this is amazing. I would say that I love Tina Turner, but listening to his episode on River Deep Mountain High, which is one of my all-time favorite songs, either Tina's version of it or Harry Nilsson's version of it is also awesome.
Yep.
When he hits those high notes, it's like, man, that's incredible. But anyway, but that got me into listening to more Tina Turner. And that just to reveal something like that is a great gift. And the podcast itself is a gift to music fans.
Absolutely. I mean, that you've just said there, that makes me think of Phil Spector. When you said River Deep Mountain High. Now, there's something where I was thinking it earlier on and I didn't mention it because I completely forgot I was going to say it, was when we were talking about the Beatles and how they changed from 62 to, well, essentially it's 1970, March is when the three of them, John had already gone his own way at this point and they were just putting the finishing touches to the Let It Be album. From 62 to there, that's another thing that's different because in a lot of the more famous Phil Spector productions, you've got lots of musicians in the same huge studio at the same time. But what you've got though is there's a difference there. Even at the end, he's still doing that in the late 60s, as you were doing in the early 60s and in the 50s and whatever. Most recordings were done live. Well, you will find that as the time came on, that's when multi-tracking came in and you had people coming in and going in separately to do bits. And so there was separation in the instrumentation, whereas before, and that's something that changed in that short period of time where bands were going in doing it live to start with. And then towards the late 60s, most of the top bands were recording separation and their parts separately.
Right. And I mean, what I find fascinating about that is I think it does detract, and especially nowadays, detracts from the music. The fact that I can do a guitar track and then send it to you and you're going to do the lead on it, even though we're 8,000 miles away from each other.
Yeah.
And in fact, Kuchmer and Jim Keltner discussed this. They said, you got to have that. The studio and the bleed is like another musician and you're vibing off. I think Kuchmer said, you got to vibe off the other cats in the room, but you got to hear what those cats are doing and you're vibing off of that. And what I find interesting is, as with many things in life, you had a situation where the music you got incredible. I mean, think about what Paul was doing with the bass on Sgt. Pepper.
Yep.
Well, he was doing something else, and then he'd come in after everyone else had left and lay down his bass part. And it's incredible. It is really the most melodic playing to the song that I think anybody's ever done.
Yep.
And he couldn't have done that if he was also playing the piano at the time. So that was a fantastic use of the studio as a tool.
Yeah.
But as with many things, there's a bell curve and it gets to the point where you're at Sgt. Pepper and then, you know, then they start doing things that start, not the Beatles, but musicians start doing things that maybe sound a little colder because, oh, I recorded that part last Thursday. Now I'm coming in a month to record the drum solo or whatever. And you don't get that vibe and you don't get that feeling of them playing together. A lot of people said the White Album is like that. I think the box set in 2018 disproved that to a certain amount.
Yep.
And I mean, you've got basically the Beatles in a broom closet playing I'm So Tired. And that's nothing but vibe. And like Ringo said, it was awesome. We basically were standing nose to nose. And it's like, yeah, well, I mean, there's something to be said for that. Musicians who vibe off of each other. And I mean, certainly that's a huge thing in jazz music. And it used to be a thing in rock music. I think we've gotten away from that a bit. And that's a shame.
Well, I think that's why John's first post-Beatles solo album, Plastic Ono Band, I think that's why that works really well. It's because for the most part, you've got the core three of them with John, Ringo, and Klaus there, and they are vibing off each other, where they could just be going there and you know, they could probably come out with something that sounds that's just brilliant with the songs that are there. But you've got these little bits that they must have sort of like fed off each other, where they could have just played the same thing throughout and gone, right, we're playing this all the way through. But you've not. Right. You've got these almost like Philip Glass sort of sections where you start with one thing and it's completely different by the end of it. It's not cut and paste like you get nowadays with some records.
Well, I mean, you listen to Ringo's fills on God.
Yeah.
It's a different fill after each line. It's slightly different or vastly different. And I mean, to refer to that song again, Ringo says, when they were recording that, I don't believe in Beatles. He said, we were in tears recording the song. And it's like, wow, you feel that. And that's a feeling that you could easily say, Ringo, record one drum and I'm going to just loop it after every line.
Yeah.
That's what they would probably do now. And he wouldn't have blisters on his fingers. So that's the positive side. But, you know, it loses feeling. And that's why that album is such a kick in the gut. I mean, I think that has a lot to do with it. So I think one of the amazing stories that I think is so fascinating is Nicky Hopkins tells that John, he said, oh, let me play piano on Imagine, John. I will play the heck out of this. And John said, no, I want to play the piano myself. And it's like, I think to myself, he knew what this song was going to be. And so he wanted to do it himself. Even though Nicky Hopkins is one of the greatest pianists of all time in rock music. Yeah. John said, no, I'm going to play the piano part myself. I find that fascinating. And I don't think a lot of musicians would do that nowadays. Maybe I'm just an old fart and I'm negative about modern music, but it does seem to lack a certain amount of soul. To me, anyway.
Well, Imagine needed that. Dare I say, simpler style of playing that John gives when he plays piano. If I mean, Nicky, incredible keyboard player and pianist, but it needed that simplicity, whereas something like Life on Mars by David Bowie, that works for the piano that Rick Wakeman plays the hell out of it on there. That would not have worked as well. It wouldn't have given that same, because he's trying to put over a simple message with the song Imagine. And if the piano was doing too much, it'd almost detract from the message that John's trying to get in there.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And it's why Working Class Hero is just an acoustic guitar. And let's face it, it's why so much of Dylan's music is so resonant. And has been for 60 years. You got a guy whose voice, it's very expressive, but it's not pretty by any stretch of the imagination, but it's just a guy and a guitar by and large, maybe a harmonica every so often, and maybe the band here and there. But I mean, I think that when you can boil it down, I think that's very important. And yeah, and obviously John realized that. I mean, who better than John Lennon to realize what's going to make the song a hit or make the song important? Let's say not even a hit. I don't know how much of his thought process was focused on that. He seemed to be more focused on doing what he wanted to do. And we can, some of us can appreciate that a great deal, much like Dylan would have. He wasn't doing something I'll probably talk about on the next podcast is give Ireland back to the Irish versus Luck of the Irish. And the difference in the two songs, both of which I think are probably embarrassments to their authors or would be if they were able to tell us. They might find them each a little embarrassing. But I mean, the difference in the two songs is also, you know, if you want to boil Lennon-McCartney down, especially 1971 Lennon-McCartney, 71, 72, those two songs really do it. Whereas you could jump back and say, well, you've got Strawberry Fields, Penny Lane. And that's a difference that which shows an amazing variation between the two of them, both of which are incredible. Whereas the other two songs, 5 years later, but that difference is quite interesting. And the ability to sell a song is also pretty interesting.
Hey, this is Dave Jackson from the School of Podcasting, a show that helps podcasters plan, launch, and grow their podcast. And you're listening to Pods Like Us.
Hey, this is Chris from Podtastic Audio, the show that I have created to help you create your amazing podcast. And you are listening to Pods Like Us.
So how do you choose what you're going to talk about in each episode and what research do you do? Well, essentially, it's listening to shows and taking notice of what's going on in the music of the Beatles and the world of the Beatles.
Exactly. And so for the commentary part, which I usually start the show off with, it's going to be just something that catches my fancy or something will suggest itself. Recently, that's been the last segment that I've recorded because it's the most difficult to do. Yep. So yeah, and then the media section that basically just kind of revolves around my life. What have I read? What events have I gone to? That sort of thing. And then the podcasts, I'm reviewing one podcast that I know and I am from one, I would say from my listening group, the podcast that I listen to for entertainment and have for years and years and years. The other one is probably something that it's like, oh, I've never heard of this, or someone will suggest it to me. I mean, I had someone say, oh, you're going to love this podcast. It's really funny. Listen to this one. So I thought, well, you know what? That's what I do. So that's what I'll do. So I didn't find it terribly funny, but that's a whole other issue.
Comedy is very subjective.
It is. I mean, when it's the worst thing is when someone doesn't get the joke, when you're kind of hanging there and it's like, okay, if I need to explain it, I failed. So I'm just going to let it lie.
Tumbleweeds going across.
Yes.
Crickets in the background.
I think that's one of the great things about the Beatles, one of the millions of great things about the Beatles. And it might have been Noel Gallagher who said they made amazing music, they wore the coolest clothes, and they were effing funny. And yes, they were so funny. And I think most people who are heavy duty fans appreciate that humor. And so let's face it, Monty Python in so many ways grew out of the Beatles. And that's just such an amazing thing to think about, that continuum. In the 60s, we had the Beatles. In the 70s, we had Monty Python. In the 80s, we didn't have much of anything. But anyway, so I do try to be humorous. I mean, I love this band. I think all four of them are amazing. They're amazing human beings. They're amazing artists. But that doesn't mean I'm going to church when I'm doing this thing. I a joke here and there. I make a joke about how Jackie Lomax's song, Is This What You Want, sounds outrageously like I am the walrus. And I say, well, probably the producer wasn't terribly familiar with music plagiarism. Well, of course, the producer was George. So I'm making a little bit of a joke about my sweet Lord, and he's so fine. Okay, we can joke about it. George would probably laugh or sue me. I don't know which.
Sue me, sue you.
Yep.
So it is one that I've got now, and I don't know whether you get what I mean. So your Beatles and solo Beatles go-tos. So if you were to pick, say, one album of each, what would be your go-to Beatles album and then album for each Beatle?
I had somebody ask me that on Facebook, and I completely copped out. When it comes to the Beatles, my choice would be the Beatles collection, the box set of all of their albums.
There we
go. Because no matter what I'm listening to, I talk a little bit about this in the last podcast. I will purposely listen to albums and songs and artists that I'm not fond of because, I mean, let's take Pet Sounds, for example. I don't get it. I mean, there's a few songs on there that I think are extraordinary, but as an album, I listen to it frequently because I think so many people who I respect and admire have said, this is an incredible album. You can start with Paul McCartney. And I listen to that album and I think, I get it. I mean, I don't see that. So a lot of times I'll throw on what I consider to be, I'm not sure which it is, Help or Beatles for Sale, that I would consider to be their weakest album. And you throw that on and it's like, this is amazing. This is incredible stuff. So when people say, what's your favorite Beatles album? It's whatever I'm listening to at that time, because I'm always amazed, and having listened to some of these albums, probably, I'm sure, in the thousands of times, every time I listen, I hear something different, or it makes me feel differently. It's a different reaction, but it's always astounding. And that's one of the incredible things about the magic of their music. Solo albums, that's not so much the case. A Leninista, I think. John Lennon was one of the most extraordinary human beings to ever live. Plastic Ono Band is a great album. Imagine is an amazing album. Heck, I could throw on Mind Games and be enthralled for 35 minutes. Or Walls and Bridges, especially. The other thing I like about those is they're not terribly well-regarded albums. I mean, and so when I listen to a song like Nobody Loves You When You're Down and Out, it's like, no, this is a masterpiece. This is an incredible song. So it's so hard. If you said which solo album, I mean, there's nothing better on God's green earth than playing The Art of Dying at an ear-breaking volume. That is an incredible song.
Yeah.
And the whole album is great. Band on the Run. I think Venus and Mars is probably my favorite McCartney album.
Yep.
Although every time I listen to Flaming Pie, I think this is an incredible album.
Yeah.
It really, for a late McCartney album, this is incredible. Band on the Run has four or five songs on it that I think are just mind-blowing. But the songs that I don't really care for, I think are just really below his level. But on all of his albums, there are a couple songs that I love. A whole McCartney album, probably it would be Flaming Pie, strangely enough. Yeah. And then with Ringo, Goodnight Vienna is a joy. And the Ringo album is fantastic. And I don't mind any of his more recent things. I'm probably not going to throw it on. Vertical Man, I thought, was a pretty good album. And you can't not like Ringo.
No.
I consider him to be the most important Beatle. He was the missing piece that once they fit Ringo into there, they went from being banned from Liverpool to being a band that would be famous for the remainder of the century, and now we're a quarter of the way into the new century, and they are still the most famous musicians ever. Yeah. That's an amazing thing. And I, when you listen to interviews and whatnot, Ringo very often takes the lead. And so I consider him to be the most important Beatle. He's what changed them from being Liverpool to being a band for the world.
Yeah. A band that's not actually been together in the same room, all four of them, for well over 50 years.
Yeah. It's that's astounding. You killed my earbud here. I got to go to the other one. All right.
You'll be going for a while here.
Yeah. In one ear, not the other. You've gone in one ear, not the other, Mark.
We've already discussed this. Well, we discussed it before, and with the concert history. I only mentioned that because of the great pictures of you with Mr. Bissonette.
He was, as I said, he was just a wonderful, wonderful fellow. So outgoing and so warm. And so he spotted my shirt right away. I was wearing not this one. Yes, I have more than one. I don't want people to think I wear the same shirt all the time. I actually do own two shirts. But he saw that and he immediately started playing Come Together on the drums. And I got a little bit of that on tape. But yeah, wonderful. I have a very mixed feeling about live music. It has to really be, it really has to get you in the soul. And I don't care for a lot of posing in rock and roll. Now, I could spend days on end in New Orleans listening to live music. So I tend to shy away from concerts. The other thing is, unfortunately, as you reach a certain age, and having played in a number of bands for a long time, the hearing, it's taken its toll. We were very stupid about our ears and our hearing back in the day, and we didn't know half of what they know now. And so I find if I'm at a concert, I remember going to a No Doubt concert a few years ago, and there were three opening acts. And by the time it got to No Doubt, all I could really hear was static. I mean, so I missed a really good concert because of that. It was annoying. But yeah, so concerts. And I've seen Paul, I've seen a few times. I've seen Ringo a few times. Ringo, I thought his all-star band, man, you can't have more fun. I remember seeing him once with Clarence Clemons. Nils Lofgren was there. Dr. John, God rest his soul, was there. It was a ton of fun. Just a wonderful, wonderful concert. And yeah, so, but I've seen Roger Waters a number of times. Some were incredible and some were dreadful. And you just never know. So I enjoy music and the skill of playing music always amazes me. And sometimes the skill is not there live. And you're seeing something and it's like, so I remember people saying, once you learn to play music, it takes a lot of the magic away. And I don't know. I mean, it maybe, and it certainly does if you're watching a concert. But on the other hand, I it's like, I can't do that. I don't know how he does that. That's amazing. I'm trying to pick things out, which is always fun. So yeah, some concerts, I'm not a huge live music fan.
Okay. Right. So what advice would you give to people wanting to start their own podcast?
So my advice comes from all the things that I failed to do. Know what a platform is. Know which platform is going to work for you. Know what other sites your platform is going to be able to send things out to. Maybe have something in the can before you start publishing. I didn't. Everything. I have absolutely nothing in the can right now. I published episode 4 on, I think it was last Friday. I have nothing recorded. So when I when I do my next episode, everything will be brand new. And I don't mind that. It doesn't take that long to come up with things and record them. But I would have maybe a couple episodes in the can and press on and probably don't look at the numbers, because that could be very, very dejecting. You know, you can get dejected very easily when it's like, okay, I worked my butt off on this and 7 people have listened to it.
Oh, man.
But you just got to keep plugging along and then shoot for that. What is it? The 6th episode? They say 90% of podcasters never get to their 6th episode.
Yeah.
So it's like, you got to make that your target. And then once that's done, it's like, okay, and I want my next target is 1,000 downloads. And my next target will be the 10th episode, where they say like 1% of podcasters make it to the 10th episode. So that's the advice that I would give. And I don't know that I'm having posted a whopping 4 episodes. I don't know that I'm qualified to give any advice whatsoever, but those are the mistakes that I made. And I would say that those would be the things I would correct if I had it all to do all over again.
Like you say, I mean, the longer that you do it, the more you get used to it, and you aim to get better at it the more that you do it, essentially.
Right. Right. And that was one of the things, is I initially thought that I would be able to speak extemporaneously. I'd listen to pods like us and then be able to talk about it for 20 minutes. And that just didn't happen, whether that's the way my brain works or whatever. So I had to sit down. What I typically do, and I think we've talked about this before,
yeah,
I'll listen to the episode open-mindedly to enjoy it and to get what I can get from it. Yep. Then I will listen to it again. I'll sit down and I'll listen to it with pen and paper. And pen and paper is what I've got on. Again, not going to be typing anything. So, and write out the episode, write my thoughts. And that way I can kind of jumble things around and say, oh, I started talking about this and I probably should have held back on that and waited, and, or I need to emphasize this, so I'm going to talk about it first, whatever. I hate the fact that I'm reading when I dictate, when I do my episodes. I feel that I can hear that I'm reading. I've asked lots of people and no one has said, oh yeah, it sounds like you're reading. I say, no, everything is written. I'm reading everything. When I go off script, I usually screw it up anyway. But, and I feel, I can tell that I'm reading. So now everybody who's listening to this will say, oh yeah, he's just reading this.
Hopefully
someday I will just be able to, that's my goal, my target. And then I'm figuring that it'll be much easier to do the podcast.
I don't know how to answer that one, but behind closed doors, Ed Chen would tell you that I can probably be very irritated when I want to show with him, because I will just suddenly come out with something that nobody knows about and I'll just come up with it from the top of my head, and then it probably irritates the hell out of people when I do that.
Yeah, but the advantage to that is I'm doing the show in number 2 studio at Shabby Road. I'm doing the episode in a room by myself. And I don't have anybody to bounce off of.
Yeah.
And I think that would make it in many ways more difficult, but also in many ways much easier to have somebody to bounce off of. Because Ed's going to say something and that's going to bring something to your mind and you're going to talk about it. And Ed, while you're talking about it, Ed's going to be thinking, oh, yes, that's right. And so on and so forth. So I don't know, maybe I'll just be completely multiple personality and I'll bounce off myself or something, who knows.
As we recorded our reactions to the first 2 episodes of McCartney: A Life in Lyrics last night, Pulling the Curtain.
Right.
We were talking about that, and because I've not got around to listening to episodes 3 and 4 yet of it.
Mm-hmm.
And Ed said, oh, we might be able to make half of an episode out of those first 2 episodes of that and us discussing them. And then an hour and 40 minutes later, Ed was saying, actually, I think we can make an entire episode out of those, us talking about those first two.
Yeah. I think that's Beatles. That's Beatles rabbit hole stuff where you can say, okay, now I'm going to talk about whatever album. I'm going to talk about John Lennon's rock and roll album, which is 27 minutes long. And you talk about it for 2.5 hours. That's pretty amazing. And I love that. I just think it's such a topsy-turvy kind of thing that it's incredible. And really, only the Beatles.
So welcome to And Volume for All, a deeply reverent and lovingly irreverent exploration of the history, philosophy, and future of the greatest music in the world, heavy metal. I am your cinnamon host crunch, I guess, Quinn.
Hey, this is Ross.
Simon.
And Thomas.
From Who Takes the Socks Off podcast, the show that answers the questions you didn't even know you needed the answers to.
You're listening to Marv, the one-man podcasting machine.
On Pods Like Us.
As I mentioned in there, Paul mentions about the song Desperado by the Eagles. And he's talking about when he's talking about the band On the Run. And I was saying to Ed, I said, yeah, but I think Desperado was released after Paul had written the song Band on the Run, because he'd started writing Band on the Run in 73. No, the year before, in 72. Or no, actually, no, there's records of him actually working on it during the Ram sessions, the song, writing it. And I said to Ed, I said, Desperado is April of 1973. Ram was recorded during 71. So it's the whole same thing as when John said about Let It Be being based on Bridge Over Troubled Water. And you think, well, it isn't, because Let It Be was recorded an entire year before Bridge Over Troubled Water came out.
The one that I always think about, and I've never actually sat down and timelined it out, because it's actually quite difficult to do, is the coda that John plays of Something. Was that before or after Cream added the coda to Layla, Rita Coolidge's piano piece? And I have to wonder, it's like, who did someone hear that and think, oh, that's a way to go? Ironically, both songs probably being about the same person. Did they affect each other in any way, shape, or form? That's interesting to me. Did Clapton hear John, which they scrubbed entirely anyway, but did he hear that and think, oh, we could use something like that on Layla, or vice versa? Fun stuff.
There's a very good book about exactly that subject. I think it's Ken Womack book, where that's all about that era and the relationship between Clapton and Harrison during that sort of period and what they were going through, because they were working at the same time, not on Something, but they were working on All Things Must Pass and the Layla album. They were both worked on around the same time, because they've got the same musicians as well on both. So it's actually, that's how it works. They were both recorded around the same time. So the Something and Abbey Road was recorded a year earlier.
Earlier. So then the question becomes, did Clapton hear that and think, boy, we should end? I mean, there's so many what ifs, and it's so interesting. The one that gets me about All Things Must Pass is that one of the musicians, I don't remember who right offhand, says that John is playing acoustic guitar on My Sweet Chord. Now, I think that's highly unlikely, but it would be awesome if it were true. I can't remember who it is who says it. One of the musicians from that session. And they were both at Abbey Road at the same time, John doing Plastic Ono and George doing All Things Must Pass. So, I mean, it's not out of the limits of possibility, but I'd love for someone else to come forward on that. And I should have asked Jim Keltner. He was on All Things Must Pass, right?
Yeah. Yep.
Wasn't he?
Yep. I think he's one of the three drummers on there, isn't he?
Yeah, that would have been.
Isn't it Keltner, Ringo, and Jim Gordon on drums on there?
Yeah, Jim Gordon.
So we've done podcast advice. Here we go. What podcast do you like to listen to?
Let's see. Most of which we've probably already mentioned.
Yep.
History of Rock and 500 Songs is astounding. Nothing Is Real is incredible. I loved Something About the Beatles, both when it was Buskin and Robert Rodriguez before they split in 1980. I still love Something About the Beatles with Robert. All of Buskin's podcasts are fantastic. His Buskin with the Beatles, which has a great title, is The Beatles Naked, which had a horrible title, and Swingin' in the 60s, which was, to me, one of the best podcasts out there. I mean, you had a group of four guys who had it all covered. Eric Taros was fantastic, and a guy with a great sense of humor, which is always something that you love. And of course, Alan was on that as well.
Yeah.
Let's see. Obviously, I am the Egg Pod. It's terrific. I started listening to Fab Four Free For All,
yep,
which I loved because it struck me as the Three Stooges of podcasters. And I only say that because I know that they would take that as a huge compliment. But it was like you're at the pizza place in Brooklyn talking about the Beatles with three buddies. So I really enjoyed that podcast. Let's see, the Untitled Beatle podcast.
Yep.
Two guys, very funny. I mean, they get a little political sometimes and silly, and it's very Chicago-oriented, but it's still a very enjoyable show. I hate the fact that I'm probably leaving something out. You've got Jerry Hammett's podcast, which is incredible. He'll take a song and kind of deconstruct it, and those are amazing. I'm looking for my phone so I can go through because I know somebody's going to say, hey, you didn't even mention me. But in any case, there are so many good ones, and that's one of the fun things about it. There are more podcasts than you have time to listen to, or at least than I do. And that was, I mean, also kind of a bizarre backward way of me thinking about doing the reviews. Because when I listen to a podcast that's dreadful, it's like, I'm not going to get that time back. I could have been listening to Nothing Is Real for the last hour. And instead I listened to that. Time is limited. So it helps to know what to go for and what not to go for. And if you do a great podcast and I forgot to mention it, mea culpa, mea culpa.
You do know that things we said today, they've had Peter Jackson on twice.
I saw that. That's incredible. Yeah, and I will definitely listen to those episodes. That's amazing.
What are other ones as well? Dear me, what's the one that Alison and Erica do? Is that BC the Beatles?
Yep. Yes, it is.
Because they've had some really incredible people on there. They've had Paul Muldoon on there, who did the book with Paul.
Book, yeah.
Yep. And then they've also had Giles Martin on there, I think, three times.
Wow. Now, I listened to that podcast way back in 2018 after meeting them.
Yep.
And I think the guest was Rob Sheffield on the episode that I listened to.
Wow.
So, and Rob is also, having met him very briefly, a very, very nice guy. And he had some great lines in his book. I mean, he threw out a couple of really great lines. So that made Dreaming the Beatles, I think it was called, a very enjoyable read.
You get some mention of the Beatles in there as well, because he had something, I mean, of Queen in there as well, because he had something to do with Queen in the early days of them as well.
Ah, okay.
For any Queen fans out there.
Fantastic, yeah.
But, so anyway, where can people find you and get hold of you?
Oh, all the usual places. I'm on Facebook. You can email me at iamthepodman@gmail.com. My website is iamthepodman.com, and I'm on Amazon, on Apple, all the typical places the podcast is, and then also on YouTube, our friends at YouTube.
Yeah.
So.
And I've just had a message from Ed, and he's reminded me that he wants to know this, and actually I meant to ask it earlier on, so I'll get this out before I do my sign out. Ed says, how do you pick which specific episode that you listen to and review that gives that you think is a good sort of like guide episode?
That's a great question. And it's very dealer's choice in a way. I know that if I'm listening to an episode of something about the Beatles, for example, it's probably going to be excellent. I'm listening to I Am the Egg Pod. It's probably going to be excellent. So there, I'm pretty much going with the most recent one. For yours, for example, I went with what I considered to be the most recent. And the one that was most of interest to me was Alan Tosin. Alan is always fascinating. I'm a huge fan of his. So it's typically the most recent one. Or if there's a subject that I think needs a little bit more examination, I'll do that. Something about the Beatles just had an extraordinary one about a horrible topic, John's death. But it was an amazing podcast. And I don't think I would review that. I've already done something about the Beatles, and I undoubtedly will again in the future. He and Richard did a Yoko episode that I certainly would want to review because they did such a great job on it. But it's many years old. In fact, I had a difficult time finding it. So it really is just whatever blows up my skirt. It's like, okay, let's go with this one. It sounds quite fascinating. Somebody does a Ruddles episode, I'm probably going to take a look at that. There are a lot of Beatles fans who don't like the Ruddles. And I can't even fathom that, but okay, so let's take a look at this. So yeah, let's just say it's very haphazard. And Ed, I've only done 4 episodes. So that 8 podcasts that I review, it's not a lot. But yeah. And then when somebody suggests something, I figure if someone has taken the effort to actually, I'm assuming, listen to one of my podcasts and then say, oh, Podman, you'd love this. Well, you know what? I'm going to go for it. So a couple I have been direct requests. So unfortunately, neither of which I've been crazy about, but what are you going to do?
We'll see how you feel about the ones that I mentioned earlier on. What did I mention? The Beatles books episode with Mark Lewisohn. I mentioned that
right.
Oh, I mean, it's not really right. If you did Winter of Discontent, which is an interesting one, where Nick, he's actually got the original recordings from the Get Back the sessions. From those tapes, the Nagra tapes, the reels, and he's going through them day by day, essentially. And I mean, so one episode might be about just 15, 20 minutes of footage, essentially. And then he goes into deep diving into everything he goes into.
Sure.
That's an interesting one to get lost in. But completely different episode. And I'm not sure whether it works for your show as a review episode. He put out a really interesting side episode recently that's about 10, 15 minutes about the history of Paul's bass that's just suddenly come back.
Well, that's interesting.
Hmm.
That's very interesting. I mean, it's an amazing story, especially after all those years.
Yeah.
So that would be, I'm sure, very interesting. Yeah, that'd be of interest.
Because he goes into why many of us have assumed wrongly that it went missing during 69. And then suddenly when this news came out and it was said, oh, I've lost that bass in 1972. It's like, well, where's that bass been for that 3 years between 69 and 72? And so he goes into all of the history of like everything up to then. And then what happened recently when Paul got it back. So, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Very interesting. So you can do an entire episode on Paul's lost bass.
Yeah,
that's what's great. It's funny because when I initially would tell people, oh, I'm going to do a podcast where I review Beatles podcast. And they'd look at me like, well, what are you going to do? Like 2 episodes? I said, no, there are over 300 Beatles podcasts. Well, yeah. Now I'm finding 300 is a gross underestimate. I'm sure there are twice that. And you could, I mean, I won't live to be able to do 600 different podcasts, but it's such a fun thing to be able to hear. It's also fun to hear other people's points of view. And then the other interesting thing, and I'm going to work on this, is there are podcasts from other countries. And I would kind of just love to get somebody to do some translating. I'd love to know what a podcast from Romania about the Beatles, what they talked about. It's probably the same stuff that we all talk about, but still fascinating stuff.
And watch this space because Spotify and Apple are working on software that will allow translation of podcast so that people can have it in the language of their choosing. That's actually being worked on now.
Yeah. And YouTube does that with subtitles.
Yeah.
You can add subtitles. And I love that. I mean, I love the fact that I could add a subtitle in Urdu and maybe somebody's listening or not listening to it, but listening to me, but then reading the subtitles in Urdu, which it's such a cool thing. And just the internationalism is something that would make Gallagher and Lyle and Mary Hopkin proud, since she did a song called International, which is a great song, by the way.
Anyway, you can find Pods Like Us on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter. I'm not going to call it X. TikTok and Threads. And you can contact us through podslikeus@gmail.com. Anyway, thanks for speaking with me today.
A pleasure. Just a pleasure. Thank you so much for having me on.
Thank you. And thank you, everyone, for listening. And I hope you listen again to another episode of Pods Like Us. Thank you.